Good morning. It is time to get up with Tampa Tom versus time. Meaning, why is it taking so much time to get a deal done? Could there be a problem? We've got Shefty right off the top. Meanwhile, a legit quarterback controversy is brewing in Chicago. Will it be Foles or Trubisky when the season begins? And then the commissioner of the NBA lays out the three options for when we will see these stars back on the floor. At what point will it just be too late? We'll answer all those questions as we get up with you, starting right now. Good morning. Mike Greenberg here in Bristol this morning, and we have a terrific show coming your way. If you're a sports fan, we are going to occupy your time for the next 2 hours. Put your feet up. I got Dan Orlovsky and Marcus Spears, Pat McAfee in this hour. Stephen A. Smith is on the way, and Shefty with the very latest news as the new league year has begun, and there is some prime talent that remains on the market in free agency. Jadeveon Clowney still on the board. He's third in the NFL in pass rush win rate over the last two seasons, according to NFL Next Gen Stats. You know who else is available? Melvin Gordon is out there. You know, he sat out the Chargers' first four games last season, holding out for a new contract that never came. He averaged 3.8 yards a carry when he returned, which was second fewest in his career. And then, of course, there's Jameis Winston. He became the first quarterback to go 30 for 30 last year, 30 touchdowns, 30 picks. He's on the market. His first career pass with the Bucs was a pick six. It appears likely his last will be as well. Jameis Winston, of course, is looking for a new home because Tom Brady is set to take his old job as quarterback of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And despite the new league year opening at 4 p.m. yesterday, Brady and the Bucs have yet to officially agree to a deal. And we will bring Adam Schefter in on that in just a few moments to figure out whether there is any reason for concern. But first, there are my guys. Dan Orlovsky and Marcus Spears are here. And while we've been talking about this for a couple of days, Dan, I know you've been looking at a bunch of tape, and there's a point you want to make about this marriage.
Yeah, Greeny, the narrative or the thought process that Tom Brady's arm isn't strong enough to play in Bruce Arians' offense is a bunch of baloney. The reality is this, Greeny, every single tape or every single play from last year that I watched, Tom Brady can show the arm is still there. How about this? Through week six last season, Tom Brady was second in the NFL in 20-yard completions, only behind Patrick Mahomes, one of the strongest arms in the NFL. Now, why do I say week six? That was the last week that he had some form of a combination of Antonio Brown and Josh Gordon. I want to reiterate the fact that if Tom Brady has the weapons to push the football downfield, he absolutely still can. And Greeny, let me leave you with this. From everything that we know about the reporting and storytelling in New England, Tom Brady was kind of shoved out the door, right? He was told, you're not good enough anymore for here. The last time that we saw Tom Brady get told he wasn't good enough was about 20 years ago in the NFL draft, and he went on a 20-year reign of dominance in the NFL. Tom Brady is going to light it up in Tampa Bay.
All right, and I will get Marcus in a minute, but I'm told that Shefty is now ready to go. So let me go to Adam Schefter here, because Shefty, I opened by saying there is still no deal done with Tom Brady. What is holding that up?
It's the language in the contract, Greeny, and they've been going over it for the last couple of days because of the complications of the new languages that teams have to use with everything going on, with the physicals that players have to take in independent cities or an independent doctor, and without the players being able to fly to the team's facility to meet with officials, to take the physical there, there are complications that you wouldn't ordinarily have. There's going to be no off-season program. Plus, with Tom Brady, I'm sure the language is going to want to be a certain way. And so for all those reasons and more, the contract still is not finalized. Now, again, there are not expected to be any difficulties here, but it's not done. And when it is done, I would imagine we'll know about it on Tom Brady's social media pages. He'll make some sort of decorated announcement. I'm sure it'll be accompanied by video or whatever it may be that officially declares that his deal is done and he is a Tampa Bay Buccaneer.
All right, so the important point to make there is no expectation this turns into a problem, but until it's done, it isn't done. Shefty, stay with me. I want to get Marcus in here quickly. And Swagoo, you heard what Dan Orlovsky said a moment ago about the arm strength still being there and Brady's ability to play in an offense that traditionally has thrown the ball downfield more. What do you expect?
I expect them to have a tremendous amount of success, G. And listen, these are professionals, man. If the arm strength wasn't there, like Dan just told everybody it is still, then you have to adjust to that. We saw Peyton Manning have no arm strength in Denver, and they adjusted and figured out a way to have a successful offense in somewhat of a capacity. But I don't think it's a big deal. Watching Tom Brady last year when he got Antonio Brown, he threw passes of 20 yards or more. When he needed to push the ball downfield, he did. So I don't think it's anything that they're worried about as far as arm strength. Tom Brady has taken care of himself as like LeBron James has taken care of himself in the NBA. He's put his best foot forward physically, and that's why he's able to play into his 40s. Listen, I know that quarterbacks are protected now, and they have a different, it's a different scenario, a different outlier out there for a bunch of quarterbacks. But to be playing into your 40s is still a great feat. And to be playing at a pretty high level like Tom Brady is, Andrew Brees, who's now in the same division, it says a lot. I'm not concerned about Tom Brady's arm strength. If I was concerned about it, he'd need to go somewhere where they hand the ball off a lot. They're going to throw the football in Tampa.
Yeah, I think you're making a very important point here. I remember so vividly when John Elway retired, and he was a lot younger than Brady is now. And one of the things he said is you just can't take any more hits at some point in your life. Well, the quarterbacks today aren't taking the volume or the viciousness of the hits that they did in that era. And I think that is a factor. We will see more of these guys playing later and later into their careers, or I guess into their lives. All right, guys, stay with me. I want to go back to Shefty here and run the hurry up through a few other things. Shefty, what is the latest on Lions corner Darius Slay?
It's a situation where the Lions are engaged in discussions with multiple teams here, Greenia. But here's the situation. Josina Anderson reported the Philadelphia Eagles are one. There are other teams, I'm told. But any team that trades for Slay has to compensate the Lions and has to compensate Slay with the new contract. Now, again, I think something's going to get done here this week, but it's not done yet.
All right, there's another defensive back we're talking about. How about former Eagle Malcolm Jenkins?
Is going to sign with the New Orleans Saints. Goes back to New Orleans, which is where he started his career. The Saints always regretted losing him. He takes the spot of Von Bell, who basically played his way out of contract there. So they get Malcolm Jenkins, lose Von Bell, and we'll see how that now shakes out in New Orleans.
And now let's talk about Cam Newton. What's going on with him?
Green, this is a tough one. I know the Panthers gave him permission to seek a trade, but the fact of the matter is that any team that is going to trade for Cam, a former MVP, is going to want to have him take a physical. Hard to take a physical these days. Hard for teams' doctors to get their hands on Cam. That complicates an already complicated trade scenario.
Yeah, this one could be hanging around a while. Now, that brings us to Chicago, Shefty, where the Bears are trading a compensatory fourth-round pick to the Jaguars in exchange for Nick Foles, who spent just 1 year in Jacksonville and failed to win a single game while he was there after, of course, having the incredible run in Philadelphia, led the Eagles to the Super Bowl. You don't need me to tell you about all the things that happened there. The point is he went to Jacksonville last year to be the starter, and it did not go that way at all. One season later, he's in Chicago, where they just used the second pick in the draft on Mitchell Trubisky a few years ago. So, Shefty, I think the question everyone has is, are the Bears acquiring Foles to be the starter or to be Trubisky? Backup.
Well, I think the fairest thing to say right now, Greeny, is they are acquiring him with the definite chance to be the starter, right? Look, they're going to bring him in there, and he's got an advantage in an unusual offseason where things are not going to be normal, where there's a chance that players and coaches will not be together in person until training camp, and new players to new systems will have a challenging time learning the other offense. Nick Foles worked with Matt Nagy in Philadelphia. He worked with John DeFilippo on the Bears coaching staff in Philadelphia. He worked with Bill Lazor on the Bears coaching staff in Philadelphia. He's going to know the Bears offense, and he's going to be able to hit the ground running. And the Bears knew they had to get a quarterback in there. So I would just say this right now. I think he's going to have the chance to start. We'll see how camp goes, but you don't go get a quarterback like Foles, redo his contract, restructure it, with the idea that he's not going to have a chance to start.
And the busiest man in the business is obviously Adam Schefter right now. Schefter, thank you, and we will continue with you as these stories continue to come in. Now let me go back to Dan and Marcus here. And Dan Orlovsky, I'll start with you again because, you know, the Bears, we wondered, will they bring in someone to start or will they bring in someone to back up Mitchell Trubisky? They sort of feel like they went somewhere in the middle. What do you expect to happen with the Bears' starting quarterback job?
I expect Mitchell Trubisky to win this competition and be the Bears' starting quarterback, Greeny. And this is a win-win for the Bears' total organization. Couple of reasons why. First of all, this move to bring Nick Foles in forces Mitchell Trubisky to put his big boy pants on, to kind of grow up and become the man of the house. It's his opportunity to grab the bull by the horns and say, no, this is my job. This is my organization, and I'm going to become the CEO of the billion-dollar company. And then on the flip side, this now allows Matt Nagy, the head coach for the Chicago Bears and play caller, to really not baby Mitchell Trubisky. It's no longer, hey, you only started 13 games in college. This allows him to coach fearless. It allows him to push Mitchell Trubisky, because the reality is this. There's 51 other guys on that football team that are now going to understand if Mitchell Trubisky does not step up and prove to us that he is our guy, we now have the safety net. We now have the ability to turn to somebody and go, you can win us football games if necessary. And that's freeing to everyone on that football team, Marcus. You know, as a defensive guy, that when you understand the quarterback either has to play well or there's going to be a different option, that is freeing as a full football team. And this is a win-win for the Bears organization. It was the best absolute move for everybody involved. Swagoo.
Swagoo, I've got two questions for you. The first is, who will be the Chicago Bears starting quarterback week one? And the second is, who will be the Chicago Bears starting quarterback week eight?
Week one, it'll be Mitchell Trubisky. Week eight, it'll be Nick Foles. And look, I understand that the competition rate, and I agree with Dan. I agree with doing that to a lot of guys around this league, but I just don't think Mitchell Trubisky is built to sustain the mental part of playing quarterback. We talked about it last year when he was going through the locker room, turning TVs off, and then he was having a little bit of a resurgence. Matt Nagy was trying to have his back. The ownership was trying to have his back. Everybody was talking about him. Listen, they facilitated everything they could to have success for Mitchell Trubisky. When you bring in Nick Foles, question for you guys. What was the last best role we saw Nick Foles in? A backup. Coming in to take over for Carson Wentz, even though it was an injury, he came in and did a phenomenal job. And I don't want to go back to Super Bowl MVP and all of that, but Nick Foles has the ability to come in after guys when they either sustain an injury or have a problem and have success.
Listen, I just think, I heard Mike Tannenbaum say this last night. The quarterback position is a developmental position. And I mean, I think it's phrased so well. And I think we're just looking at Mitchell Trubisky as a finished product, and he's not that. And Nick Foles is the ideal guy to go, you can do this, and I'm going to help you do this and play as well as you can. It's the perfect fit, and I believe in Trubisky still.
I think I like the idea of him being a developmental position, but there's also an issue of patience, and we'll see if the Bears run out of that quickly. Guys, we're just getting started. Tons to do as we get up with you this morning. Tom Brady not only left the Patriots, he left the AFC. Did he do that to avoid the young stud quarterbacks? We'll ask these guys coming up. And now that Tom Brady is in Tampa, Jameis Winston is the odd man out. What makes sense for his next move? We'll answer that question next. Let's get up on ESPN.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Get Up is brought to you by Pizza Hut. No one out-pizzas the Hut. All right, among the many storylines surrounding Tom Brady's jump to the Buccaneers is the idea that he was smart to get away from the loaded AFC, to get away from teams like the Ravens and Chiefs. I was on First Take yesterday, and that came up, and Stephen A. Smith was not buying it at all. Listen to this.
I don't want to hear a damn soul talking about how Tom Brady should not have stayed in New England or gone someplace else because you want to avoid Patrick Mahomes or you want to avoid Lamar Jackson or something like that. That is nonsensical to me. It makes no sense. It goes against the very thing that competitive fervor is supposed to represent. I can understand you don't want to go to an inferior team, but I'm sorry. As an individual, you shouldn't be avoiding individuals when it comes to competition. To beat a man, you got to beat the man.
So Steve and I actually went at it yesterday, and he will join us in an hour to continue this conversation. But Dan Orlovsky, you were one of the people that I've heard saying that it was wise or would be wise and then ultimately was for Brady to get out of the AFC. What'd you think of what Stephen A. said?
Yeah, I mean, ignorance is always afraid of change, Greeny. And Tom Brady wasn't ignorant in the fact that those two up-and-coming quarterbacks in Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson are coming, and so are their football teams. And so the best way for him to go back to the Super Bowl, the easiest route for him to go back to the Super Bowl and win the championship was going to be out of that conference. Now, that being said, Stephen A. Smith, I wish he was sitting right here with us right now, because Tom Brady is still the man. Like, there is no, he's got to go beat somebody to become the man. He is the man. He's gone to 8 out of the last 9 AFC championships. 4 out of the last 6 Super Bowls, winning 3 of them. So Tom Brady has not passed the baton to anybody. The reality is, when he took the step back and looked at what was the best way for him to win a championship, it was going to be to see those guys in the end result and face them, rather than have to go through them to get there, Greeny. So, like, listen, Tom Brady's still the man. Make no bones about it. This is not Denzel Washington passing the baton to Michael B. Jordan just yet, okay? They still have to go hunt him down.
What do you think, Swaggo?
Patrick Mahomes is the man, period. That's what we've been talking about for the last year. That's what we talked about, his opportunity to get the ball back in the playoffs. They would have won the game. Patrick Mahomes has taken the throne to being the best quarterback in the NFL. We all know that. That's belaboring a point that everyone on television has ever said. And I agree with Stephen A. I've said it on this show. Like, Tom Brady is not afraid. And this is really in defense of Tom Brady. Now, maybe he did make the decision to avoid Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson in the AFC. But I wouldn't think that Tom Brady would be afraid to play those guys before getting to a Super Bowl. Maybe he took the easier route. I just talked about him being 40 and wanting to get to the Super Bowl and going to Tampa. Obviously, he has to face Drew Brees. That's not going to be easy either. But the fact to say that Tom Brady was afraid to go play against Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, if Tom Brady told me that, I would look at Tom Brady differently. But I'm sure, and I want to have the confidence that Tom Brady just decided to go to Tampa because he thought that that was the best place for him to play football.
We will have Stephen A. In this conversation, and we'll do it in an hour, so you'll get a chance, you guys, to talk with him about it. What I said to him, and I'll say it to both of you, is, first of all, there's nothing easy about winning a Super Bowl, regardless of what team and which conference you play in. And I always tell my kids, life is hard enough on its own. Don't make it harder unnecessarily. If you can find a slightly easier path to an extraordinarily difficult goal to attain, go ahead and take it. That's not being cowardly. That's being smart. Now, Brady, of course, replaces Jameis Winston, who led the NFL in passing last year with more than 5,000 yards and became the first player in Tampa history to reach that threshold. But that obviously isn't the whole story, or he would still be there. He also led the league with 30 interceptions, which made him the first player in NFL history with 30 touchdowns and 30 picks in a season. He was his own personal 30 for 30, as people joke all the time. So if this is it for Winston in a Buccaneers uniform, he is the only player to throw a pick six as his first and last pass attempt with a franchise in the last 40 years. He threw 7 pick sixes last year, the most in a season in NFL history. And you guys know that I'm sort of the last man standing on the Jameis Winston hill. I have not given up on him, but the question becomes, what is the right place for him to go now to ultimately reach whatever potential it is we believe he has? Marcus, I will start with you.
I heard, I think it was Shefty or somebody said it, but I agree. I think Pittsburgh. And I'm thinking Pittsburgh because of Mike Tomlin and culture. We saw Mike Tomlin win games with Duck Hodges at quarterback. We saw him stay in games with Mason Rudolph. And obviously, Big Ben Roethlisberger is there, who is kind of in that same sloshy vein as Jameis Winston. Obviously, not throwing the interceptions, but big physical quarterbacks, that type of offense that likes to throw the ball downfield, takes chances. Pittsburgh may be a good landing spot for Jameis to go sit. I believe this firmly, Greeny, and you saying you're the last man to die on the hill. I'm not sure if I'm standing up there with you, but I will say I've seen guys benefit from having the opportunity to step away from the game and actually watch it being played and have an opportunity to diagnose things, see things in a different light than going out there with the pressure of starting. Maybe that's what Jameis needs to invigorate his career and try to understand why not to put the ball in the harm's way. But that, to me, that would be a good landing spot. It wouldn't be any pressure for him to play, and Roethlisberger is built similar to Jameis Winston.
What do you think, Dan?
I agree. I've warmed up to Pittsburgh for Jameis Winston. My reasoning is this. We're obviously in a very unique state when it comes to the NFL in the offseason, right? I don't think it's a good time because Jameis Winston, the reality is he needs to kind of remake his career, reset his career in the NFL. And it's just not going to be a good offseason to go do that because you don't want to go sign somewhere and kind of be the presumptive starter in an offseason where you don't know when you're going to be allowed in the building. You don't know when you're going to be really able to sit down with your coaches and start studying that playbook. Go somewhere where you don't have the pressure of having to play right now. The pressure of having to play and win games as the starting quarterback without any kind of offseason. Go to Pittsburgh and understand that my job is to come here and get my feet wet again and learn this offense and not have the pressure of going out every single Sunday and leading our team to a win. And because of the uniqueness of this offseason, I think it's best for Jameis Winston to find a place where he can be a backup and learn and breathe without the pressure of having to win football games. The reality is this, Greeny, he's got to learn from his mistakes of the past and he needs to have the opportunity to apply them somewhere in the future. I just think it's best for him to do that as a backup role right now.
Yeah, I agree with both of you guys. I've come around to that. I'm not giving up on Jameis, but I do think, look, the guy's been the starter since week one of his rookie year. The opportunity to learn behind a veteran is probably a good idea. Frankly, in Tampa behind Tom might be the best, but that seems impossible. Meanwhile, how about this veteran? Pat McAfee is going to join us coming up next and answer the question, is this guy the one who is going to lead his beloved Indianapolis Colts to the promised land? We'll talk about that and more with McAfee after this sneaky Hembo moment. Which coach quarterback tandem did Bill Belichick and Tom Brady beat the most times, including playoffs? That's the question. The answer is next. Get up on ESPN.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Winning, I think it's only natural that anyone would think that to win is important. That's the reason you're in this business. If you have any kind of pride or any kind of dedication or any kind of backbone or spunk to you, you should try to be the best in your own profession, regardless of what it is.
Yes, it's a dynasty.
Anybody who has the idea that just to play or just to take part and that's all that's necessary, I think he's in the wrong business. The best, again, is signified by winning.
We're ready for some football conversation, and the question from Hembo this morning is, which coach quarterback tandem did Belichick and Brady beat the most times, including the playoffs? And I will admit, I got this wrong. I thought the answer was going to be Rex Ryan and Mark Sanchez. The answer is Mike Tomlin and Ben Roethlisberger, whom they beat a total of 7 times. There you have it. By the way, Orlovsky got it wrong, and I didn't even ask him the question. But how about a sight for sore eyes? Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Pat McAfee is back with us here. It is great to see you, my friend. And we have not had a chance to get your thoughts on all of the big football stories that have taken place since last we were together announced is Tom Brady to Tampa. What do you think of that fit?
I think it isn't. By the way, Greeny, thank you for having me. I watch you every morning. It's an honor to be chatting with you again. I feel like I'm getting smarter by the minute just looking at you on my phone right now. And welcome to the internet, by the way, with FaceTiming all your guests from their houses. For me, I don't think Tampa was the sexiest fit whenever you talk about from a like a headline perspective, because Tampa in the football world hasn't been relevant for a long time. But once you started seeing it start to add up and Bruce Arians came out with Jason Light and said, we're going to give him roster control. We're going to offer him up a lot of money. We got Godwin. We got Evans. And if the reports are true that Tom Brady and Antonio Brown are kind of a package deal, Bruce Arians has dealt with Antonio Brown in the past, as has Tom Brady. You put Antonio Brown on that offense, this Tampa Bay Buccaneers team is going to be must-see television. And ultimately, at the end of the day, for the first time in 20 years, Tom Brady got to make a decision that a lot of players get to make, and that is, where will my future go? And down to Tampa just seems like it's going to be a very good fit in my eyes. Anytime you can get TB12 in your city, in your building, you're immediately going to get better. And with Bruce Arians, Clyde Christensen, Byron Leftwich, Tom Moore, who backed up Johnny Unitas, he's all down there. It's a swan song for that coaching staff to get the greatest of all time. I'm excited to see what they do with it.
And they have a sneaky good defense. And Shefty just tweeted in the last 15 minutes that a large number of players have reached out to the Buccaneers to say they're interested in going there. Here, we have it. Since word surfaced that Brady is expected to land in Tampa, an unexpected high number of players have reached out to the Buccaneers to let them know they want to join the former Patriots quarterback there, per league sources. Good job by the staff getting that built so quickly. So, Pat, I want to ask you this question. If they're able to put together a few other pieces around him, whether it's Antonio Brown or not, is there a reason why this team cannot go to the Super Bowl? Do you see a scenario where Tom Brady is back in the Super Bowl this year representing the NFC?
A couple of my friends are those people, by the way, that are trying to get to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. As soon as it was announced via text message from an icon to Colin Cowherd that Tampa Bay was where Tom Brady was headed to, a couple of my friends who are currently free agent at the end of their careers are trying to ring chase. You know, everybody used to ring chase to go to New England. They would take massive pay cuts just to get up there to get a Patriot way, play football with Tom Brady and get another Super Bowl. Now Tampa Bay is becoming that place, and there's no way the Tampa Bay Buccaneers fans could have ever imagined that. I think in the NFC, it's an old guard. In the AFC is the new guard, obviously. Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson in the AFC, and Bill Belichick still there. That's going to be a monster. But in the NFC, you got Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, and that 49ers team. It's going to be very difficult to make it back to the Super Bowl. But I don't see how you could ever rule out Tom Brady with one of the most explosive offensive weapons set, which is what the Tampa Bay Buccaneers will have next year. I think they're immediately in conversation, and I think they're going to be a team that everybody's going to want to watch. I think they're going to have a lot of success.
All right, so you mentioned Belichick. Let's talk about him for a minute, because Belichick without Brady becomes a fascinating point. He spent his first five seasons as a head coach with the Browns. He had one winning year in 94. That was the only time he made the postseason. There were a lot of extenuating circumstances there, but it is what it is. In 2008, Tom Brady tore his ACL in the season opener. Matt Cassel stepped in. New England finished that year 11-5. They missed the playoffs. They had been 16-0 the year before. In 2016, you may recall, Brady served a four-game suspension to start the season. Belichick went 2-0 with Jimmy Garoppolo, 1-1 with Jacoby Brissett. That loss was to Rex Ryan.
I don't think they realize how huge a loss this is going to be. I faced Belichick one game without Tom Brady at quarterback. All right, and they were 3-0 at the time. We ended up going to Foxborough with the Buffalo Bills team, an average Buffalo Bills team, and not only did we beat them, we shut them out 18-0. Does it make a difference? It makes a huge difference, and they're getting ready to find out.
That was Rex with us just the other day. So, McAfee, let's talk about Bill without Brady. What do you think is at stake for him right now?
Well, I think Rex Ryan should take a little bit more credit on himself as opposed to on the Patriots without Tom Brady. I think Rex Ryan and the Ryan family, not only legends of humans, but defensive minds, they're great. And Jacoby Brissett was a rookie quarterback basically at that time. So anytime you have some exotic defenses going against a rookie quarterback, they're going to have success. And the fact that he was able to shut them out is absolutely beautiful. But if you talk about Jimmy G and Jacoby Brissett, and even Hoyer, who has had success other places, now granted, he threw like 15 interceptions in one game for the Colts last year. But I think Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels have the mindset that we can groom a good quarterback here. I don't know if Jared Stidham's their guy, but I think they have a lot of faith in the fact that there has been great quarterbacks in their organization who has gone on to do great things in other places. Jacoby Brissett a year ago for the first 8 games before Cam Hayward picked up an offensive lineman and dumped him on his knee was an MVP candidate. That's a 100% a fact. He was playing great football. So I think Bill Belichick, Josh McDaniels, you saw Bill Belichick not go to the combine. You've seen Bill Belichick do things over the last 20 years that no other coach or GM would be able to get away with, but that's because he has a massive brain. And I think whatever quarterback gets in there is going to be a quarterback that they like, is going to be a quarterback that's good, but I don't see them having a better year than Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I just think it's going to take a little bit for the 70-year-old coach.
All right, and so let's one more thing here. You mentioned that the AFC is sort of the new guard, with the exception, of course, of your favorite team, the beloved Indianapolis Colts, who sign old man Philip Rivers, if you will, and Rivers trying to get to the Super Bowl for the first time, and he comes to a team in Indy there that feels like it's got a lot of pieces in place with a really good offensive line, and they've got some weapons, T.Y. Hilton, etc. How good do you think that team is? Philip Rivers and the Colts, are they a legit Super Bowl team in the AFC?
Well, they're my favorite team because they grossly overpaid me for a long time to do something that was minimal work. So I absolutely love the Indianapolis Colts. I think Philip Rivers was a good signing. Now, towards the end of the year last year, it did look like old man Philip Rivers was throwing a med ball there a little bit. But I think he got to the point where he got to the, oh, to hell with it. I'm just going to throw it into defensive meetings to see what we got. I got a DM from Jacob Hester, the old school LSU legend who played with Philip Rivers with the Chargers. He said, anybody that plays with Philip Rivers is their favorite teammate because the guy just absolutely loves football. He's a competitive man. He likes growing his family and he likes ball. That's all his life revolves around. He told me a story about how one year, whenever they came and played against the Colts, the night before the game, the Indiana High School State Football Championship was happening at Lucas Oil Stadium. Philip Rivers dragged Jacob Hester over there just because he wanted to see what Indiana High School football was like. This is a guy whose legacy is very much contingent upon whether or not he can get a Super Bowl. Him and Eli Manning had basically the same exact career after that draft night fiasco, and Eli Manning won 2 Super Bowls. Philip Rivers did not. The man that loves football is uber competitive. If he can take this team that is very well put together to a Super Bowl, that not only helps his legacy, it helps the Colts and Chris Ballard. I'm just not 100% sure what the hell they're going to do with Jacoby Brissett.
All right, McAfee, it's great to see you, my man. Let's do this again soon. You stay safe, and we'll check in again. Thanks, my man.
Greeny, you don't need makeup either. I think this should be the new you.
Well, that's a debate we can have another time. Coming up next, we'll have First Take, then SportsCenter, NFL Live, the latest free agency news. The Jump is back with up-to-the-minute NBA news. SportsCenter's back at 6. Two-hour bracket special, college basketball's greatest of all time, is at 7 Eastern. The top 64 men's and women's players ever. Then a primetime NFL free agency special is at 9. And cap the day with SportsCenter with SVP at 11 Eastern. We are here for you with the sports on ESPN. Coming up next on Get Up, when might we see LeBron and Anthony Davis and the other NBA stars back on the floor? The commissioner, Adam Silver, lays out the options next.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag, done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
We are back on Get Up, and amidst all of the quarterback questions that are out there, there are still no answers for Cam Newton, one-time league MVP, one-time first pick in the NFL draft, and now clearly on his way out of Carolina after the Panthers go ahead and sign Teddy Bridgewater. The question becomes, now what happens for Cam Newton? And I have Dan and Swagoo back. Let me start with you, Swagoo. What do you think is the best scenario for Cam Newton from this point forward?
To go to Washington and reunite with Ron Rivera, Scott Turner, the offensive coordinator, some familiarity. I'm not out on Dwayne Haskins. This doesn't mean that Dwayne Haskins can't be the future for the Washington Redskins and the starter, but I would surely bring in Cam Newton, who I have familiarity with, And we all know the story, G. This is based on Cam's health. If Cam was healthy, we wouldn't be having. He'd be one of those quarterbacks that flew off the shelf and somebody would have picked him up to be their starter. But at this point, I don't see any reason not to bring Cam in. I said it when I said Teddy Bridgewater should go to Tampa Bay and challenge Jameis Winston for a starting spot or even push him to a higher level than he could go. I feel the same way in Washington with Cam reuniting with a coaching staff he's familiar with and go push the young rookie to be who he is. And then Cam ultimately gets healthy and finds his landing spot to become a starter again.
The thing I keep thinking, Dan, is if Cam Newton was healthy, then he wouldn't be leaving Carolina right now. The Panthers know better than anyone else does. What do you think is the best scenario for Cam Newton now?
And I'd say the Los Angeles Chargers, Greeny. I mean, the Chargers for a couple of reasons. One, Anthony Lynn is an outspoken coach that he wants his quarterback to be able to move. He thinks if you're a stationary quarterback in today's NFL, you're dead. Two, the Chargers are really in a win right now mode. I mean, a top five defense. We all know about their weapons on the outside. A very good or much improved offensive line with the two additions of Trey Turner and Brian Bulaga. Greeny, I just can't wrap my head around the fact that Cam Newton's not going to be a starting quarterback. I think that the Chargers should at least entertain it. But if that doesn't happen, I also think the Chargers should draft Jordan Love at the sixth pick. So I just can't wrap my brain around Cam Newton being a potential starting quarterback in 2020.
All right, Dan, Marcus, stay with me. Much more football as we go. But there's other news out there in the sports world. And let's start with this. The Lakers players were tested for the coronavirus yesterday, 4 days or coming after four Brooklyn Nets players, tested positive. Brooklyn and the Lakers were the last opponents before play was suspended. Last night, the NBA's commissioner Adam Silver was with Rachel Nichols here on ESPN talking about three scenarios the league is considering in trying to return.
I'd say I'm looking at three different things here. One is, of course, when can we restart and operate as we've known it, 19,000 fans in buildings. Then option two is, should we consider restarting without fans? And what would that mean? Because presumably, if you had a group of players and staff around them, and you could test them and you could follow some protocol, doctors, health officials may say it's safe to play. And then a third option, are there conditions in which a group of players could compete? You know, and maybe it's for a giant fundraiser or just for the collective good of the people that you take a subset of players, and is there a protocol in which they can be tested and quarantined or isolated in some way, and then they can compete against each other just because people are stuck at home, and I think they need a diversion. They need to be entertained. And I just add to that point, you know, to the extent we were the first to shut our league down, in what way can we be a first mover to help restart the economy?
So obviously the coronavirus has had an extraordinary impact on the world of sports. Here's just a small smattering of it. Baseball delaying opening day, and we don't know when they're coming back. MLS suspending their 25th anniversary season for a month, and the NHL suspending the remainder of their current season and still waiting to see where that will go. And for some answers, we are delighted to be able to bring in the commissioner of the National Hockey League, Gary Bettman. And thank you so much for doing this, Gary. You just heard from Adam Silver there talking about the way he is approaching the possibilities of a return. I would ask you the same question. What are the options for the NHL right now?
Well, the options, first of all, good morning.
Morning.
I hope you're feeling good, as are your listeners. The options are obvious, and we're all exploring them. The fact of the matter is none of us is going to be able to do anything until we get it all clear on some basis. We, too, have explored and continue to explore every scenario, which will depend on the timing of when it's safe to go out. But I think the most important thing in the short term is we should be focusing not just in sports, but we can be a good example on the fact that self-isolation is going to help the spread or reduce the spread of the coronavirus. And that's what we're focused on, keeping our players safe and setting a good example.
Obviously, that is important. I do want to hear your thoughts on what the all clear looks like. Whom is it that you are consulting with on those sorts of things? I think sports fans would be interested to hear someone in your position who has all of this, so much responsibility. From where would you get that all clear? And who are the people that you consult with and hear from?
Well, we have our own internal medical people that we use on a regular basis. And we also have consultants who are specialists in infectious disease. But more importantly, it's going to be what the local governments and perhaps the federal government tell us about what is safe. In other words, we were playing as governments one by one were suggesting, first suggesting and then ordering that sports stop playing. I mean, when the NBA stopped, obviously they had to deal with the fact that a player had tested positive and the team wouldn't take the court and they had a full building of fans. We discontinued, suspended the rest of the season a little off. We're taking a pause, but we suspended the next day because every scenario we came up when we were all playing with said that once a player tested positive, it was over. In terms of being able to continue to play. After seeing what the NBA went through, it was clear to me that a positive test was inevitable and that why wait for that to happen? Let's stop playing now. And that's why I had a call with the board on Thursday, and by Thursday night we had taken a pause in the season. But a lot of what's going to happen, we can be as creative as sports leagues as we want, and we should be. We should be considering every scenario, whether or not we play to full buildings, whether or not we play to empty buildings. But it's going to be determined by people and organizations beyond us with the scientific and medical expertise that will tell us when it's okay to play.
Curious about the calendar. That's obviously something that there's so much uncertainty. But your season generally ends around the same time as the NBA's does. The playoffs and the Stanley Cup Finals will end sometime in early June. And then you go into their summer and the next season's considerations. So is there a point at which it will become impossible for you to continue this season or to have a playoff for this year?
Well, I believe that under the current circumstances, we can go later than we've ever gone. How late is a good question. What we want to make sure of is that we don't do anything that from this season that might impact next season having the normalcy it's supposed to have. So the two factors are timing relative to how late we can go without impacting next season and making sure that whatever we do competitively, if we're going to complete this current season, it has to have integrity. It has to be respectful of the well over 100-year history of the Stanley Cup. And that's something we're very focused on.
And finally, I would ask you, what are you hearing from your players during this time when there is so much uncertainty for all of us? What kinds of things, questions are you hearing from your players?
Well, the questions that get the most asked relate to testing. We had a test positive our first two nights ago. There have been some players testing, but the medical advice that we're being given is that if you're asymptomatic, there's no reason to be tested because it's not going to tell you anything. So we're not over-testing. We're testing when it's appropriate. And when there's a situation, whether it's a player or a family member or an executive, we then have to go back and trace contacts that may have been had and whether or not they were meaningful contacts. But in the final analysis, getting people, whether it's sports or society as a whole, to self-isolate and reduce the spread of the coronavirus is probably the most important thing that any of us can do.
And then a quick final question for you here. I only have a moment, but I would wonder, with so many of you, we just showed how many of the different sports leagues have been impacted by this. What, if any, communication and brainstorming have you done with people like Adam Silver and the leaders of the other sports who are being impacted by this?
We've all been in contact. We're all dealing with the same issues. We're all having similar responses. I don't think anyone has a magic potion as to what the right thing to do is. We're all staying flexible. We're all considering the alternatives. We're all staying in touch with our constituents. I have at least one conference call a day with a task force that we have internally at the NHL. We're having conference calls on a regular basis with our clubs. We send memos out every day with an update. We've got to keep everybody completely informed because, A, it's important that they have the information, and, B, in terms of having a sense of calm, the more information people have, the more realistic they can be in dealing with this.
Gary, I really appreciate you doing this. Thank you. We'll talk again under hopefully more cheerful circumstances. You stay safe, and thank you very much for the time.
thank you, and you too. Stay safe, stay healthy.
All right, take care. That's Gary Bettman, the commissioner of the National Hockey League. Again, there are just so many more questions right now than there are answers. We'll continue. Tom Brady to Tampa. A lot of answers we're looking for there. Lewis Riddick will provide them right after this.